This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. You know, many aspiring writers spend years working on perfecting their first novel, trying to get it just right. But Chapel Hill-based writer Michael Jones didn't quite have that luxury. Oh, yeah, he worked on his novel for more than 7 years, but then lost nearly everything overnight in a house burglary. Four copies of his draft on four different laptops, all gone. So he had to start all over. And now, more than 10 years after that first start, his debut novel, After the Race, is finally done. Michael Jones is in a studio now with his book, After the Race. Welcome. Good to have you here.
It's great to be here, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about how this book came to be.
Well, I had the idea while I was at UNC of writing a novel, and I started it in the fall of 2002. And I finished about the first third of it by the spring of 2003, and I started the process of revising and adding to it over the next 7 years. And I came home from work in 2010 one day in September, and my house had been burglarized, and all the laptops and copies of the book had been stolen. And so this was actually 2 days before I was scheduled to have hip arthroscopy and microfracture surgery. And my plan had been I was going to spend some of the time rehabbing from that injury, tying all the different pieces I had together and finishing and then going through the revision process. So you can imagine my disappointment at having all of that work taken. And so during the process of my rehab, I spent a lot of time angry, and it was a traumatic experience. I'd never been through anything like that. And I wanted to give up at first, honestly. I mean, I had a perfectly good excuse, and the idea of going back and redoing all that work was a little bit daunting. But as part of getting my head on straight about that and working through the process of making sense of what had happened, I decided I wasn't going to let that stop me. And so I went back to the drawing board, and, you know, here we are.
What's kind of the good news and bad news, isn't it? I mean, the bad news is you had really counted on this rehab time, this downtime to pull things together. On the other hand, now you do have downtime to start over if you can get past that fury at what happened to you.
That's true. And it would be great to say that that's how it played out, but I was still processing during that time. And so I didn't do so much writing plus I was pretty heavily medicated. It was pretty traumatic surgery, so
Some great novels that came out that way, but you really have to earn that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us about the premise of this novel. What are some of the themes that animate this book?
Well, in part, it's a novel about identity. I think that's sort of the central theme. Both the father and the son in the book have different aspects of what make them who they are. In the case of the father, it's he's in the special forces, and he's a very macho individual, and so that's how he sees himself. And he suffers an injury early in the book. Actually, the book starts with him having suffered this injury and the struggles that he has making sense of his life in the wake of that injury. That's one of the central themes, and that precipitates the ultimate central action in the book. And the son is in a similar vein. He's a runner, a very gifted and talented runner, and he works really hard at it. And that's how he sees himself. And so at a certain point in the book, he loses that ability to run the way that he thinks he needs to. And so it's ultimately very destabilizing for him as well.
Will you read for us?
Certainly. Okay, this is from the beginning of the third part. The shot from the starter's gun echoed through the woods. Sneakers crunched gravel and shuffled dirt. Charles glided ahead, his stride smooth and easy in the mid-August heat. He settled into his pace, his breathing calm and light. Other runners panted and clumped behind him. He rounded a corner into a wooded ravine crossing a dry creek bed. The footfalls behind him grew heavier, the breathing more ragged. Near the 1 mile mark, the trail flattened and stretched across a meadow. He lengthened his stride. He was a sail blown by strong wind. The sun scorched grass and red clay underfoot, but a cooling breeze tousled his hair as he pulled away from everything. His heart thudded fast, grew stronger with each stride. The gasping and crunching of other runners faded.
Michael Jones reading from his debut novel, After the Race. He's going to be at Letters Bookshop in Durham next Tuesday, July 15th. He's here with us now on The State of Things. That's Charles. It is interesting to me that you talk about a macho father, special forces, his identity seriously challenged with an injury that, if you put all your eggs in that particular basket, and somebody says, well, you're not the man you used to be. That's rough. Charles takes on athletics as a way of both demonstrating, but also sort of separating. I mean, it's a fascinating relationship in the sense that he does these things that would clearly win approval from a man like that, but also, you know, sort of sees himself as over and against.
Yeah. Well, and they aren't super successful either because his father doesn't see that as valid athletics in the same sense that he might say football or something more macho and more aggressive than running. So.
Charles's mom is absent from most of the book, and it's really the father-son dynamic, I think, that plays is in the spotlight here.
Absolutely, and increasingly later in the book, it's less of the father as well because his attempts to find or deal with the absence of identity result in him devolving into alcoholism or further into alcoholism than he is when he starts the book. And that results in his being somewhat distant from his son and then increasingly more so as he declines into greater problems with his drinking and mental illness.
We do know something about Charles's mom, Emily. She was served actively in the Navy. So you wanted to make military family life a part of what's going on here, right?
Absolutely. And it was a big part of my life growing up. So there are certain aspects of growing up in a military environment that they can prove problematic for children. Moving a lot, for instance. I mean, you never really get a chance to settle into an established group of friends in the same way. So you're always an outsider to some extent, you know, after the first move anyway. You know, you're always coming into peer groups that are established and dealing with those kinds of things.
Now, when we first began to talk, you told us about the burglary at your house, which you discovered when you came home from work, which is to say you had a day job. Had you always thought of being a writer or was the day job where you planned to be forever?
I absolutely always planned on being a writer. I grew up, I sort of remember writing my first short story when I was in third grade. And in my estimation, anyway, it was a work of high fiction and, you know, rose to the muster of high literature. So but I always had it in the back of my head that it's what I wanted to do.
Yeah. And so getting back to this family now, obviously these sort of self-medication, the way everybody is coping with these serious problems, and problems that really have an impact on the relationship between these family members. Wayne's alcoholism, very important part of this story.
Absolutely.
Tell us about that and sort of how and whether or not, because again, this kind of question of why we write, right, and to what extent we're looking at those aspects of our own lives and get some distance from that. Is that a part of your life that you were coping with yourself?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I've conducted extensive research on the subject and reached the conclusion that there's absolutely, once the wheels start coming off the cart, absolutely nothing cool about alcoholism. And the way in which otherwise able, sensible, kind people begin engaging in series of increasingly reckless and selfish behavior. And, you know, from both secondhand and I can say firsthand experience, you know, it's a difficult thing once it starts, and it's a difficult thing to get out of. And in the novel, Wayne doesn't successfully extricate himself from that pattern, but you see how it affects him on a profound level. And I like to think that my experience ultimately led me to take a more compassionate view, ultimately, of how it happens, because Wayne's not a bad guy, and it's tough to get around that in reading the book, because he does do some very, you know, things that from a distance appear to be the products of a bad person, but they're not really. I mean, my hope is that you can see that this selfish and reckless behavior, it's as much as anything else a product of his mental illness as it is his alcoholism. So as far as my personal experience for me, a lot of it came down to reconciling myself to some things that did happen to me growing up. And becoming compassionate toward a character like Wayne certainly helped me to become more compassionate to myself. And
what was that, through contemplation, or do you think writing helped bring you to that place?
Both. I'd say I didn't realize I was doing it while I was writing. And, I wonder how common that is. But, you know, in retrospect, looking back on it, there were some times when I couldn't keep going with the writing and I had to put it aside for a while, which is one of the reasons it took me, you know, the better part of 7 years at first to feel like I had a finished product. And again, in retrospect, looking at it, those were things that I couldn't deal with at the time. But looking at the finished book, I can see where I had to go through that process of contemplation and then write it out.
Were there moments in the writing where you sort of fought with what you had just typed out? In other words, you maybe revealed something to yourself you weren't quite ready for and tried to change the script to meet, sort of your prejudice about your own condition.
I think so. I don't think I could say it any better than that. But, yeah, the process certainly had elements of that. And sitting back and saying, wow, you know, is that really how I want to reflect on that?
Sure. Yeah. Will you read for us again?
Certainly. This is somewhat later in the book. Wayne stood outside the shutters of his mind, watched the world unfold in slow motion. He saw cancer flowing through its veins and in its labored breathing. It was beautiful, dignified in its quiet dying, embracing its disease. It loved, cherished, made whole, renewed, would resurrect if given time outside man's time. Wayne slipped beneath the surface of his thoughts, drifted into easy slumber, certain all would be well. Suffering was not incidental, an affliction to be endured. It was his communion with the universe, his pain the world's pain, his slow dying the same dying everything that ever was had known. His life would become a celebration of his dying, a daylily in full burst. He could neither alter nor prevent decline. He might as well enjoy it.
Michael Jones reading from his debut novel, After the Race. You know, both Charles and Wayne suffer from mental illness and their addictions and their relationship. And what I think the book does quite brilliantly is show the complicated relationship. You've got a DSM that can describe for you mental illness and its symptoms and perhaps its treatments. We know some of the impacts of alcoholism and other substance abuse. And then, of course, the impact on relationships. But the dynamics, the way in which it all becomes one, and then the difficulty in disaggregating this stuff, where it all was that for you? Were you able to untangle some of this? I mean, it's always curious to me what kind of revelations a writer might have, and whether or not some of the things that might not be in the DSM become more clear to you.
Well, it goes back to compassion, I think, on some level, seeing the way that sickness unfolds. I mean, one of the big problems with mental health problems, at least in my experience, is you don't know that's what's going on. And so you have these negative feelings, you have these impulses, and they seem rational, you know, and they that's the only world you know. And so it seems perfectly normal. And it can be really tough to make it through the world in that way. In both Wayne's and Charles' cases, it's undiagnosed mental illness. So neither one of them knows that these negative feelings, this anxiety, this, aggression, that any of these things are atypical. And so they're left to make their way through the world the best they can.
Well, it's interesting because if you talk about the DSM and its treatments, and of course that's all a very good thing. It's good that we can analyze and then come up with a rational way of treating. But it does create a separation right between the clinician and the patient. You've got a problem. I don't. Here's how I can fix it. Compassion means quite literally to suffer together. And so in this case, the therapy is not to fix it, but engage. You know, we'll suffer together and see what we build together. On the other side of that, a different approach to treatment.
Sure. And I think what you're saying about the DSM, I'm going to speculate a little bit and say this tendency to treat the disease as something separate from the individual is maybe a little misguided, because it is all of a piece. So you go in and you hear this thing that's going on in your head is wrong. That thing going on in your head is you. You can't disentangle those things, I don't think. And so you're not treating the disease. You're treating a whole person who this is all they know.
Well, a whole person, a whole family, and a whole society, whether you like it or not, because you're fighting these wars based on a set of norms that you embraced going in. Your ideas may have changed once you actually got to the theater. You begin to question those norms and whether or not everybody who sent you knew what they were doing. It's a big, complicated picture. And the novel also grapples with other subjective questions, like what do we mean by happiness? How do I know when this is over? Right?
Oh, absolutely. And that is definitely a central theme. So Charles and Wayne are both engaged in escapist behavior. And so for both of them, it seems that the way they find happiness is escaping from bad feeling. And so, I try to ask the question, does that work? You know, is that valid? Does escapist behavior in a constructive way? And you could argue that being escapist through running is constructive. It makes you healthier. And I don't think anyone would look at Wayne's solution and say that that's constructive. You know? So does this escapist behavior in constructive or destructive ways actually work? Or is there happiness out there for happiness' sake that one ought to pursue?
I am talking with Chapel Hill author Michael Jones on The State of Things. His debut novel is After the Race, and he'll be reading at Letters Bookshop in Durham next Tuesday. Yeah, running is an important part, and people are either running to or running from. So this notion of escape and you know, one way or another, getting out fast is an important theme in your novel, or at least a plot device.
Absolutely. And there's a central event in the story. It's a race called the Great Ghost Chase. And, you know, Charles argues that that's about as dumb a name for a race as you could come up with, because you know, nobody would chase after something that they couldn't see. And this idea, I'm maybe in a subtle way suggesting that happiness is a really difficult thing to chase. And, you know, it's more natural for people who suffer from this mental illness or this predisposition toward substance abuse to just run away from something, because that's something you can put your hands on. It's palpable.
You set the story in the 80s and early 90s, and you talked about how this, and I think it's evident in the book, another escape is the one that we don't call, in fact, for the entire 80s, and I think maybe even still today, is considered a virtue, accumulation of wealth, accumulation of material goods, which in this country is not considered a vice. It's considered a virtue, and yet an addiction and utterly destructive, and clear that you've thought about that.
Sure. You know, one of the things that happens in the story is Wayne comes by money, and quite a lot of it. And so he has these, from a distance, I think you could say, infantile desires to you know, make himself bigger through acquiring things that other people are going to find impressive. And he gets all those things. And ultimately, that winds up being a bankrupt concept for him, because he either destroys or loses all of those things. And he's no better off when he has them. And you could argue that stripping those things away allows him to see what's really going on, to the extent that he sees anything in the novel.
And you have to come at that artistically, because really, socially, we do demonize the addictions of the poor and glorify the addictions of the wealthy and actually aspire to them. So it's nice to shine a light on sort of how this can possibly work for all of us. And then you've got Aristotle in this book, duking it out with Machiavelli. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, I was trying to be a little clever there, but entertaining as well. So Charles is really conflicted about a lot of things in the novel, and one of the things that he's conflicted by is he sees his father, who doesn't seem to actually be a good person or a sincere person or an honest person, and he seems to get what he wants. And against that, Charles has this impulse to actually do things for the right reasons, such as he can figure those out. And so later in the novel, he winds up with a mentor and a coach who seems to embody those ideas that there are first principles that are worth serving, you know, that transcend material desires or comforts. And I try to drag that sort of debate, you know, this idea, is it worthwhile to get hung up in trying to seem good as opposed to actually pursuing being good. But again, this idea of pursuing something that's not tangible is a difficult one.
Great stuff. Chapel Hill-based author Michael Jones, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Michael Jones is going to be reading from his book, After the Race, at Letters Bookshop in Durham next Tuesday, July 15th, 6 o'clock. If you missed that, you can always go back to our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the descendants of the Von Trapp family singers. They're on their way to Cary, and we'll get a preview in a moment. Stay tuned.